Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. We're back. Unfortunately, we weren't able to record last week, but I'm back. And tonight, I'm joined by Jose Campo, who hasn't joined us on the podcast since... This is your second appearance on the podcast. Yeah, back in, I want to say, September, October, something around there.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Last year, basically.
Yeah, well, I don't even remember. What were we talking about on that podcast?
I think it was about Wanderers. I remember one being about Wanderers. We also had Jake. So it was one was about... It was talking about Melbourne Victory and then NPL Victoria.
Yeah, okay. And,
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, right. So I think we did talk about the Wanderers a little bit on that podcast. That was obviously like... 3-4 months ago, and a lot's happened with the Wanderers since then, and that's why I've got you on here, because we're going to start today by talking about the Wanderers. Now, just a quick sort of spiel, I guess, about the A-League round that we've just seen. Some very interesting results. Auckland kicking on, Adelaide kind of coming unstuck, and a good F3 derby and all sorts of things that I'll probably delve into a little bit more later on at the end of the podcast. But another exciting round where we're really kind of just beyond the midway point of the season now, and things are now getting to a stage where teams chasing the finals have really got to kind of, you know, get their shit together if they want to make the finals. Teams chasing potentially a premiership, they also need to get their shit together if they want to win the title or finish in the top two. And then there's some teams who, if they don't get their shit together in like the next 2 weeks, their season will be over. So yeah, it's all happening. And then, you know, we're talking A-League here, and obviously we've got NPL seasons right around the corner as well. February leading into March, always a very sort of exciting period in the Australian football calendar. So let's start. Like I mentioned, we are going to talk about the Wanderers because Jose's here tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about Alan Stajic and some of the criticisms of late and I guess the discourse around the Wanderers. Then I do want to talk a little bit about Perth Glory. I've been wanting to talk about them on the podcast for a few weeks because I do think they have been a lot better of late, and I do want to kind of talk about that. And then we've got an interesting discussion that we wanted to have about, well, MacArthur in particular, because they've lost three key players this window. But not just MacArthur, there's kind of a few players now that have left the league in this window, and the kind of exporting of young talent from the A-League is going a little bit bananas at the moment. So, Jose, let's start with the Wanderers, because they got back to winning ways against the Roar on Friday. Now, I don't think we need to beat around the bush. It wasn't a great performance from the Wanderers. And to be honest, I think there were some mitigating factors to that. You had an awful pitch. Probably, honestly, like Suncorp, it never ceases to amaze me. It just keeps topping itself with delivering terrible pitches week after week when Brisbane play there, and I think that was maybe the worst one yet that I've seen. But to the Wanderers' credit, they did just enough to win, and almost in a way, you can look at it. I mean, I've seen a lot of Wanderers fans online reacting to that result and kind of being like, how can we only scrape by what's essentially an NPL team in Brisbane? And I don't really deny the fact that, yeah, Brisbane are probably an NPL quality team. They are that bad. But I also think they had that loss to Auckland. They've had a couple of weeks where things haven't gone their way. And then I felt they were never going to kind of come out. When your confidence is low like that, I never felt they were going to come out and like just bounce back and win 3 or 4-0. It was always probably going to be a bit of a grind. Other things, we saw Mata going off early. Wasn't great with a little sort of cramp injury. I think he was feeling his hamstring. I'm not too sure how bad that's going to be. But bottom line is the Wanderers are 3 points outside the six. So they're 3 points off MacArthur in six with a game in hand. They've had definitely up and down inconsistent results, but they've also had flashes where I think they've been really good, and I think there's been enough there to suggest that Alan Stajic can take this team to the finals. But, which I'm sure you'll talk about too, there's also been a lot of things where you go, how is this really any different from what maybe Wanderers fans have seen in the last couple seasons under Marco Rudin, for example. So what's your overall sort of picture that's being painted for you when you think about the Wanderers?
Well, I think that the Wanderers is just, it's just very inconsistent sometimes. Like in attack, they can look promising, but sometimes it can have no end product as well. Especially sometimes in defense, like they leak way too much. Every time I've watched them, just looks so leaky. But you're right. In some days, they do look good. Like they do look like a really good team. Like a down that away draw against Melbourne Victory, there were some good plays. I think they played some of their best football there as well. And even before that, they were in like a good form as well. So honestly, I think with Stasic, he clearly like brought over his like attacking knowledge over to the Wanderers, and it's clearly working. It's just that organizing a defense seems to be one of his like weakest attributes to his coaching. And I think it's been showing a lot throughout the season. But honestly, I feel like the Wanderers are not in the deep end just yet. They're still 3 points behind sixth place, especially into the final series. Anything can go anywhere. And then that Brisbane Roar win, like, even though if it's a scrappy win, a win is a win. We try and get as much points as we can get. And honestly, I reckon with the fans as well, like, I feel like it's a bit of an overreaction. Like,
yeah, that's what I wanted to kind of talk about, because it just seems like, you know, like let's make no mistake here. The Western Sydney Wanderers are a massive club. They're one of the biggest clubs in the league, right? So there's expectations every week. If you win a game, it's going to be one extreme of, hey, we're back and here we come and we're going to make the finals and it's going to be a great season. If you lose a game, it's going to go completely the other way. But like, let's look at, so, you know, what I want to talk about was just the fan criticism of like Stajic, because I get it. There's definitely been ups and downs and it hasn't been smooth sailing. So there's definitely some of the criticism is warranted. What I didn't understand was like the Auckland game, for example, you know, that was a game that could have gone either way. That, you know, it really, and really, I don't think Auckland deserved to win that game. I think a draw would have been a fair result. But the Wanderers had some chances. They didn't take them. Auckland had some chances, but then they got one right at the end and Moreno scored a really great goal. But it wasn't the type of loss where you come out of it thinking really bad about the Wanderers, you know? And I just think it seems, and, you know, I'm not a Wanderers fan. I don't necessarily talk to a lot of Wanderers fans, so I'm kind of going to tread lightly here, but it does seem like there's just a lot of this sort of, we have to win every single game, and it's like a really outcome-based thought of like, if we lose, we played badly. If we win, we played well. Like, sometimes you can lose, but actually, you know, play okay and probably deserve more out of the game. And also, like, Auckland, for example, are a really good team. You know, they're beating everyone at the moment, for example. And I don't think the Wanderers are, like, at that level. And I think the other thing, Jose, is that there seems to be some impatience, probably, around the fan base with this stuff.
I think the impatience has just been accumulating ever since Mark Rudan and before that as well. Like before Mark Rudan, we made it to the final series. We haven't gone to the final series in, like, maybe 5 to 7 years or something. And I think people just expect too much from the last 10 years. Because, I mean, let's be real. Like, the Wanderers hasn't been a top quality A-League side for a very long time. I mean, like, probably not since Shinji Ono and all that. So I think it's more of a, like over-expectation from the fans. But, yeah, it's just really, that's it. Just expectations. It's just too much ever since we won the Champions League. Every season is just trying to like create this scenario where the Wanderers have really have been good, but they just haven't, you know. It's just too much expecting. That's literally it.
Yeah, and like I feel with so I think Stajic is going to like be backed from what it looks like. I don't think, you know, if you go out and you sign Gers back on a 2.5 year deal, you get Carluccio back, you get Alte back. Now maybe those guys wanted to come back home, you know, and come back to the Wanderers anyway. But, you know, those are good signings, and those are signings that, you know, you're making three signings as well in mid-season in January, which for me kind of signals like they think they've got a good team. Like they think that they can ruffle some feathers this season and do something. So that's why they've backed the manager and they've made those signings, for example. And I think, you know, we can talk about this in a moment, but I think they probably need to get another central defender in, if possible, too. You wrote about that recently too. We'll talk, you know, talking about their defensive issues. But I think Stajic is gonna like th this. It's not like he's gonna get sacked this season, for example. I just don't see that. So I know there might be some reservations about him and what he can do. But I think if you're a Wanderers fan, you probably need to accept the fact that he is gonna be there like this season. And draw on the fact that like, so for example, a performance we didn't mention was Adelaide United away when they won 3-2 and they turned the game around from being 2-0 down, 2-0 down, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So, and that game, I remember watching, obviously I was there. And in the second half, like that was the best football the Wanderers have played all season for sure. And I think it's just a matter of like going back to what you said about consistency is can they do that on a weekly basis? And really, I think that's where probably the fans are getting frustrated. You look at the quality in this squad, but particularly like the experience that they have, Borello, you know, you're talking Lawrence Thomas, you're talking obviously Mata, Kraev, who's had success with Wellington. Josh Berlanti is not the player that he used to be, but he still had success at other clubs. Like, surely the issue of consistency, which in most cases is mental, surely if you have a lot of experience and to guide good young players, and Stajic has talked about this, but Milanovic, Bonatic, Priestman, Sapsford, like Aidan Hammond, like heaps of good young players, heaps of good young players. So I think the blend is actually fine in age profile, and the squad is built pretty well. So that's why I'm kind of like, okay, and that's probably what a lot of Wanderers fans are saying, like surely at some point this team can make like a 4 or 5 game run, a winning streak, and really kind of, you know, put some points on the board and become a really solid finals team. That's where the frustration lies. But that's what I was going to get to, like what you mentioned and what we've been talking about around this over expecting and expecting too much, but also just like expecting too much too soon. Like let's think about the Wanderers here for a second. You mentioned it, how little they've actually made the finals in the last 10 years, since really they lost the grand final here in Adelaide to Adelaide in 2016. Like since then, the Wanderers have been not much better than like Newcastle. Like that's the reality, right? But obviously, when you come from the highs of Champions League win, first season winning the Premier's Plate, like, and also just the fact that you're in a hotbed of football talent and passion, you just got that bar and it's not coming down. But for me, I think I'm not saying you lower your expectations to your point where you accept defeats. That's not what I'm getting at. What I'm just saying is I think you might need to accept that this season could be used as a springboard for something much better next season, for example. And my last thing on Stajic, you know, one thing the Wanderers can do is they can score goals. And Stajic, even though Perth were a disaster off the pitch last year and Stajic was there, Perth scored heaps of goals still. So that's something he's been able to do and still bring across. But the defensive stuff, like you mentioned, Jose, is a big deal. So I guess two things for you is, is Stajic a manager that can, like, can they have a season where they are fifth or sixth, or maybe they even just miss out on the finals, and next year they could actually do something serious? Or is he not? And this is a team that he just has to make the finals no matter what. And also, in terms of January, you've mentioned the centre back. Like, they, you know, how much of a need is that to get a centre back in, particularly maybe someone to partner Alex Bonatig? They've had, you know, Belante playing centre back the last couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, honestly, I think Stacey does have a project in mind. I mean, with what he's trying to build up the Wanderers, I could definitely see it with the players he has, the players that are performing. He definitely has something in mind. If he doesn't, then what's the point? Why is he there? Why is he going to a club that has like so much pressure on him as well, performance wise? But I think he needs to grow into it, is what I'm saying. Like, could, like, tactically, like, attackingly, and tactically in attack, yes, it is good seeing them, you know, be fluid in attack. But in defense, I feel like sometimes they sacrifice a bit. But, you know, that's fine. Like, and with inconsistency, I think it's more related to a mentality issue within the squad. Like, sometimes the Wanderers can look a bit, like, off. Like, they obviously want to play, like, a high intensity as well. But sometimes they just slack off a bit. And you can really see it in their players as well. So, honestly, I trust Stasic into building a good squad. But consistency-wise, it's going to have to take a lot as well from the players as well and from him. It has to be like the whole team. And what was the other thing you mentioned? It was you
about the need for a defender.
About the need. I don't know. Yeah, like, I feel like that we do need another centre back in there as well. Like, that South Korean defender, what was his name? Like,
yeah, so Jeong Tae-wook. I mean, he's still out.
Yeah,
but I don't think he was great even when he was healthy. Like, is he someone who you just, like, play it out, and if he comes back from injury, goes back next to Bonatig and everything will be okay? Like, I'm not entirely sold on that.
Nah, not really. He's been all right in some cases, but I think we need someone of a bit more leadership in defense, because he looks a bit shaky sometimes. And I think it's because he's just moved to a new country. Obviously, surroundings are a bit different, so maybe he hasn't adapted yet to the style of play that Australia has.
So. The other thing, just to finish this kind of conversation, is, you know, I've seen a lot of criticism of Brandon Borello this season, particularly like in the last kind of month or so. Are you someone who thinks he can be doing more? I mean, this is a Socceroo that we're talking about, and I'm not too sure when the last time, I don't have him in front of me, the last time he actually scored, but it feels like it's been a while ago anyway. And, you know, like, Antonsen has actually probably been better than him in like a month or so. Like, Temelkovski has now actually looked more like an A-League player now that he's, like, actually getting some more minutes off the bench. And yeah, there's that. And also, like, Milanovic's production in terms of goals has definitely, you know, he's lost that from earlier in the season. I'm not too sure what's happened there. He just doesn't seem to have the same sort of confidence maybe that he had early on the season.
I think Barella is more like a form issue, because I think he's been put in a role where he has to, like, support the team a lot more, whereas I think in the last seasons, he kind of played more like an advanced forward type of thing, where he just makes runs in behind and just presses the high line. But he's more like a false nine. He has to be more technical, pass lay the ball off, make the free balls, but he's not really doing that. Which is why I think Sapsud and Antonsen work well, because they can kind of just rotate. I think Antonsen's a bit more on the technical aspect as well. So I think it's more of a form thing for Burrell. I think he's got the technical ability to work in the playing style that Stasic wants, but it's just form wise, it's just not been really good. As for Milanovic, I think he's just been a bit too selfish sometimes. Like, he has an end product, but it's just at times where he just, like, over dribbles or overthinks his situation. Like, he's not really composed. as well in the final third, like always giving the ball away when he's like just outside the box. And that's kind of like a frustrating factor when you're watching the Wanderers. It's just that Milanovic is not really trying to work with the team. He's more like working for himself. And I think that's really it.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't heard that. That maybe Milanovic is being a little bit selfish. I don't really get that vibe from him when I watch, but I think you could make a case for it because remember, like this guy, what turned down offers from Europe in the off season to stay in Western Sydney for another season, and maybe he's, I don't know, maybe is he growing a little bit frustrated with the team and the inconsistency, and like he's trying to just do everything himself to, you know, make up for it or to overcompensate. Like that's a possible argument that could be made. I'm not sure. Or is he actually trying to do the good thing? And he, as in, like he thinks if I, you know, I need to do more to get us into the finals, and I'm going to just kind of put this team on my back and try and get us, you know, into winning positions. But maybe it's having, you know, the opposite effect. Yeah, Milanovic is one to keep an eye on. I think if we were talking about him like 2 months ago, we would have said, "Oh, next Socceroos squad, he's definitely going to be in it." Now I'm not so sure. All right, let's talk about Perth Glory because that was actually a team that the Wanderers beat recently on the, I think it was the 14th, I want to say, yeah, of January. So it's like 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago now. But that was a performance from Perth, and also they've had many just lately in the last sort of month or so where I think they've been just a lot better. I think they're a much more cohesive unit. It's clear that they've moved past that sort of first 2 months of horror that they had at the start of the season where they looked like a pub team, particularly defensively. But it seems like they've kind of moved over that hump, they've moved over that bridge, and now they're much more of a, like a team that can actually can compete. And I think Zrilic was kind of talking about this. They obviously lost the victory on Saturday. Now, they lost 2-0. I thought in the first half was pretty even. Both teams had their moments. Second half starts. The first 10, 15 minutes, Perth come out and they are like all over victory. And they had like three or four really good chances. And honestly, Zrilic shut off the game. And I think if one of those goes in, like Perth maybe win the game like 2-1 or 2-0, like because there's just that, there's 11,000 fans at HBF Park, there was a really good atmosphere, the Shed were really into the game. If they score first, they take the lead, and the players just feel confident like that. They definitely are a team at the moment that's very sort of fragile mentally, but it goes both ways, where if they score first in a game, you feel like they're actually going to grow into it, and they're going to get confident, and they're going to feel like, yeah, we can win this game. But then if they concede first, you think it would go the other way and they're going to end up losing 2 or 3 nil. And that's kind of what happened in this case because Volupele scored. I think for me, Oli Sale needs to do better. He just kind of parried it basically straight to him. I know he's really shit after the game that Perth probably should have followed up a little bit better, the defenders, but it's a pretty poor save. Like he just saved it straight back into the center of the pitch. And then, you know, 1-0, and then 6 minutes later, Santos, good header, great goal by Victory, and 2-0 when the game's over. So, like, it's like 22 minutes there from the start of the second half to when Victory go 2-0 up, where there's that roller coaster of we could have been 2-0 up, and now we're 2-0 down, and now the game's over, and once again, we have to chalk it up as another loss and move to next week, when really, if we had done this and done this, this we could be looking at another 3 points, and holy crap, things are looking so much better for us. We're moving up the table now. So I think it's hard. I think it's hard if you're a Perth fan to kind of look at it and think, yeah, but the results are more or less the same. Like, where are we going? Where we've got 9 points right now. You know, how can you really say we're going somewhere? But I think the performances are just a lot better. And I just feel like if they keep playing like this, their luck is surely going to turn. And I'm not saying they're going to go on like a fucking 8-game winning streak and go crazy. I'm just saying that surely there's going to be a few wins in here coming up that at least Rilic and the club can take with them into next season and go, okay, we've got a foundation, we've got a building block in which to work off for next season. What do you think? What do you think of Perth?
I think Perth have been one of the most improved sides so far. I mean, from where they were a couple of months ago, I think they've definitely made some progress. Obviously, the results don't have to show yet, but they are showing, as you can see from like this, the beginning of the matches, like you say. I remember I watched the first match against, I think, MacArthur. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, it
Yeah,
was
when they lost 6-1, the opening game of the season.
6-1. Oh, the defense was so shit. It was atrocious. It was disorganized. They were all over the place.
You know what? It's a fair description, and I'm sure Zrilic probably thought the exact same thing. But you know,
Yeah.
that's the thing though, is they don't defend like that now. Like
No.
they're not like it's not an all you can score buffet. Like you know what I
Exactly.
mean? Like they're not
Yeah.
that open. And that's
Yeah.
a credit to
So there's
Zrilic, I think.
exactly. So there's clearly some progress, you know. I mean, if I was a Perth fan, I would be happy with that. Because for the last few years, I mean, Perth Glory have like been so shaky all the time. But this is where it's like progress. You see progress starting to happen, and when you see progress, that should be taken as a positive, and it should be taken as a positive for all the players as well. You know, it's because when you see like it's just all it is. It's just mental wise. They just have to prove mental wise, and they can pull through, fight for the games that need to be won. Then I think they'll do good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he said in the press conference as well about, you know, they came into halftime against Victory, and he reckons the players are really driving it in terms of like we can win this game, you know, we're riding this, we can do this, and it's really just someone who is very kind of honest and transparent in presses, so you feel like when he says something, it's not some bullshit that he's making up, it's genuine. So like looking at basically, since they lost to Sydney 3-0, these last four games, so they beat Auckland 1-0. That was their best game of the season by far. Not just to beat Auckland, but more just the manner of it, the way they defended, they dug in, like it was a great game. Now, then they lost to your boys, the Wanderers, 2-1. But honestly, I remember watching that game and thinking, how on earth are they going to lose this game? Like they definitely deserve a point at least. I didn't think the Wanderers were that impressive at all in that game. And they obviously had that bizarre own goal to open the scoring, where like you know was it like Labib, he smacked the ball into Mechella and it went in, like just a crazy like
Yeah,
fluke
four
own
minutes.
goal. And then they had the Newcastle game where they drew 2-2. Now I'll be honest, I was a little bit disappointed by their performance in that game, but they still managed to actually get a result and get a point, and that's where it was like okay, like. That's pretty good. You know, they didn't play that well, but they were able to get a point. They were able to get something out of the game. That's a good sign for a team that's been, you know, struggling so much mentally in these games. And then, you know, you can look at that game against Victory as either a step forward in terms of they went toe to toe with Victory for most of the game, or a step back because ultimately it still ended in defeat. I think I'm going to take the first option that it was more of a step forward. And also, like, the other thing here, Jose, is like, yeah, you know, Melbourne Victory have got an embarrassment of riches, and Perth Glory can't compete with that in terms of player for player. They just can't. And I think in some games, you know, we try and with some A-League teams in some games like Brisbane, classic example. I think a lot of people out there are trying to like, you know, get their crystal ball out and get their magnifying glass and what's wrong with Brisbane and you know, how are they this bad and stuff. It's like, oh, I'll tell you why they're that bad, because they sign bad players. That's why they're bad. You know, it's like bottom line. There's other stuff too, but like bottom line, that's why, you know? And I think sometimes in some of these games, it's like, yeah, look, the better team won because they've got better players. And I think Perth, they can tactically try and do what they want, and they're getting better at that. And there's definitely more of an identity forming there, which is really good. But ultimately, when it comes to like goal scoring, for example, you're still hoping for Adam Taggart to finish your chances. And if he doesn't, you're going to struggle for goals.
Yeah, I think the over-reliance on Taggart is a problem. But some of the signings, like Pat Wood, I don't think he's really clinical in front of goal. I think he's a bit shaky. But I think Pearman as well could help up front. I think it just needs to be shared a bit between Taggart and some of their attackers. But ultimately, I would
Definitely.
definitely take the Victory game as a positive, because if you look at the players Victory have, they should, on paper, they look like the better team. But Perth Glory were competing with them for at least winner of the match, and I think it is a step forward. I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah, so they've got the Mariners at home this Friday. Now that for me, that's a massive game because that's also another team that's mentally really fragile at the moment, who inexplicably threw away the derby with the equalizer from Natta. I couldn't believe what they were doing, which led to the corner, which led to the goal there. That was absolutely insane. But like, that's a team that has just come off the back of a draw, which felt like a loss, and now has to travel all the way to Perth on a Friday night. If they can get a good crowd in again, make it a little bit raucous, you know, make the good positive start like they did against Victory. And then they're just the type of team. Like, I feel my prediction for this game would be if Perth score first, yep, they're going to win. Like, I think that they'll be fine. So, you know, it's just like they're just kind of in that space where it's almost like they don't, because they've lost so many games, they have to pull themselves out of this sort of constant negative probably mindset and this constant you know, when the chips are down, the chips are down, you know? And so it's like you feel like you're not that far away, but then you concede and then it's like, oh shit, here we go again. So I think I think they're fighting with like some mental sort of demons there. And I think so, Mariners at home, very winnable. Now City away is after that. That'll be tougher. I'm not too sure if they're gonna get anything out of that. But then they've got Sydney at home, and Sydney we've seen, you know, have been very up and down, and who knows what they'll serve in that game. Then they've got the Wanderers away, and we didn't mention this in the Wanderers discussion, but if you're playing the Wanderers right now, you'd rather play them at CommBank as opposed to playing them at home because they're terrible at CommBank at the moment. So yeah, look, I think, you know, this next sort of this February, basically the rest of February for Perth is really big. If they can just get a couple of big results and just make the fans feel like there's something to believe in, it'd be huge.
You know what? I think next game will really like define where the Central Coast are, like where Perth Glory is at. I'm sorry, because Central Coast for like the last three or four matches have been looking like really shaky as well, especially in defense. I mean, even when they won against the Wanderers, that last 10 minutes of that match, they were looking so open. I think they had to make like three goal line clearances, and then beyond that, it just three draws in a row. So I think the game against Central Coast Mariners will definitely define how Perth Glory are functioning as a team. As for Melbourne City, I think it'll be a really tough match, but from recent results, I think Melbourne City should win that one, and I think for Sydney FC as well, it should be expected. But as for Western Sydney Wanderers, I don't blame anyone that says Wanderers are shit at CommBank, because that ground is honestly a curse. Okay, so if I think that match as well will define how well Perth Glory can play as
Yeah,
well, because
well
Wanderers.
yeah, like that's in a month's time. So I mean that's interesting though, that game, because like even a month from now, like what where are the Wanderers going to be a month from now? Are they going to be in a better position? Are they going to be the same sort of team? And then Perth, we've just mentioned, like, can they go into a game like that with a couple of wins and feeling a lot better about themselves? Who knows? The other thing with them is their new signings have, you know, kind of come in. You mentioned Pat Wood. Lachie Wales has made bench appearances. I'm assuming he's going to start sooner rather than later. And also the Japanese boys, whose names are escaping me right now. But the left back, Misao. Misao, the left back, Yuto Misao. And he's come on the last couple of weeks. He looks good. He looks like a solid player. But the other Japanese boy they've signed, whose name's escaping me, I'm not too sure what's going on with him.
Aoyama? Is that he's talking about? From Marconi?
No, not Oyama. Not Oyama. It was the other boy they signed in the January window. Jeez, I'm forgetting this. But I'm not too sure what's going on with him, when we're going to see him. My understanding is he's a central defender, so like
Oh
that
yeah,
could help them.
Takuya Okamoto.
Okamoto, that's right. Okamoto. Thank you. So we'll see what happens there, if he can boost their defense as well. Labib picked up an injury, which really sucked because he was playing awesome before then. And you mentioned Pearman, and there's all sorts of stuff happening with Pearman, and it looks like he's going to QPR at the end of the season, and there's, you know, reports that Gloria pissed off at his agent and all this sort of stuff. Like, okay, whatever, this, that, and the other. But the kid can play and he can help them at least for the next, you know, 4 months. So let's see what he can do. All right. Let's get into the final thing I wanted to discuss on this podcast. Now, we've seen MacArthur is kind of the main team around this, but we've also seen, you know, Hayden Matthews leave Sydney FC to go to Portsmouth. We've also seen Thomas Waddingham leave Brisbane to go to Portsmouth this window, and probably another two players will leave to go to Portsmouth. The way those guys absolutely love A-League talent, so I'm not too sure why they're so obsessed with it, but all right, cool. And MacArthur, though, Ollie Jones goes to Randers in Denmark. He's joined Paul Izzo and Mohamed Touré over there. Jed Drew, who we always like, Jed Drew had an awesome season, like just a fabulous player. He really took his game to a whole new level. I mean, Jose, you would have seen it against the Wanderers on New Year's Day, where he just totally destroyed the Wanderers that day, for example, right?
It was amazing.
Yeah, he's just an excellent winger, and I think he's thoroughly deserved that opportunity. He's gone to Austria, to Hartberg, and then we also had Ariath Piol leave earlier on in the month, going to Real Salt Lake in the MLS. So they've lost those three young players. And I think we could talk about them just briefly first, because I think they've actually just announced a signing before we've gone on air. It's the French boy, Tunisian French winger, Cowie, I think is how you say it. So, yeah, and I think there's reports that they're going to get a new centre-back as well. And also, we've seen the reports about Garin Kuol potentially coming back and joining them on loan. So, looks like they're going to... Like, I had some fears about them coming on here on this podcast, and I was watching them against Auckland, and fears about, are they going to be able to, you know, squad-wise, are they going to be able to handle these losses with those three players? Because Ollie Jones and Jed Drew in particular, PO as well, but more so those two, like, they're not just good young players. They were players that were fundamental to the way that team was playing. To lose them at this time was a bit of a blow, but it looks like they've reinvested the money and they're going to be okay. So that's less of the discussion I'm going to have. More so, particularly with, you know, what's going on. We've seen now, you know, insane transfer revenue that now A-League clubs are starting to... Well, insane based on the fact that A-League clubs, you know, barely generated transfer revenue for you know, the best part of 10, 15 years. And then now, in this last sort of 2-3 years, are starting to, you know, produce numbers on that side of things that we thought would have been unheard of, like a couple of, you know, 5 years ago. So MacArthur, you know, I think Ollie Jones, I think the figures that maybe he's been put out there, something like 400K, that's pretty good for a player that only just, like, literally played, like, pretty much two good months of football and has really only just had his breakout into the senior team, and then bang, just got snapped up for a pretty decent fee. Piol is a much better fee, I think closer to like the million mark, so like that's pretty good. Now the Jed Drew one I think is much lower, and that's probably because he had only 6 months left on his contract, but still, for MacArthur, that's good money. Like that's what they need. We know that they've struggled, of course, with crowds and with pretty much everything since they've come into the league. A lot of off-field problems, but they're one club. But I'm sure, you know, Brisbane, Ruben Zakovic already mentioned after that Wanderers game about, you know, losing Tommy Waddingham is great for them from a business point of view, but also it means that, you know, they do kind of need to replace him. And I think this is where, like, It feels bizarre to put it like this, but A-League clubs, like, yeah, you're going to have to, like, start behaving and strategizing like any European club would, you know? Like, let's think of a club like PSV in Holland, for example, is a good one. Like, they produce heaps of good young players.
Ajax as well. Ajax, that's the same.
Ajax as well. That was the other one I was thinking of. Yeah, like, But a lot of clubs in Holland is a good one because, like, in the Eredivisie, heaps of good young players come out of there and they get snapped up by either English, Spanish, Italian, like, you name it. All the big clubs are looking at Ajax, are looking at PSV, and just basically poaching players from their youth talent, right? But those clubs, now, obviously, we're talking about Ajax and PSV, obviously have much different financial sort of backing and much more stable finances than what clubs in the A-League do at the moment. So it is, we've got to factor that in. But a club like Ajax will lose a player maybe through their academy, or a player who comes through their academy, plays for the first team for a couple of years, then gets signed by, I don't know, Bayern Munich for 40 million. And then they lose that player, but either they reinvest that money into going and signing a player to replace them, or they've got another guy ready to go who's going to come through the academy and replace that player, right? So my point is, excuse me, I've got a bit of a sore throat and a cough at the moment. So yeah, just bear with me. But my point is that when these young players leave, and they're going to leave early, and we're seeing that they're leaving quite early now, because I think a lot of the clubs in Europe now are seeing, like, oh, the A-League is playing a lot of young players and a lot of them are decent and they can help us. So let's go and poach them on the cheap, because we can do that, because, you know, a lot of clubs have players on shorter deals and it's easy to snap them up. So now, if I'm a MacArthur, like, as a learning experience, maybe from this window, like, they chose to reinvest the money, and now that they've brought in some more experience and they've kind of changed maybe the direction of their squad a little bit, okay, that's fine. But let's say they didn't have the ability to do that and they lost a Jedru, who's next up? Like, who's the guy that's going to come in? Now, they've got Bernardo. They signed Bernardo's brother, Enrique, for example. Now, he's much younger. But I'm not talking about MacArthur specifically here. I'm just talking in general. You look at Brisbane as an example. I mentioned Waddingham before. Zakovic is now kind of, it seems like he was almost saying to the owners, the management in Zach Anderson and Kasper Tafta, like, hey, we need to now reinvest some money into another striker. But did Brisbane plan for the fact, I doubt they did, but did they plan for the fact that they were going to lose Waddingham? Okay, what do we do? Who's going to fill that void? Are we going to promote someone from within? Are we going to go and sign someone? So this is where it's actually exciting for me, because now the club's actually, they're not just operating on a year-to-year basis off a salary cap. Like, because, yeah, they are, because we have a salary cap. But now you can project, okay, I've got, now this isn't the case for every A-League club, but like for Perth Glory, they could do this. Adelaide United do this, and they have been doing this. That's why they're doing so well. But like the clubs in Sydney can definitely do this. Sydney FC, the Wanderers, the Mariners with their academies, is you can look at a kid who's 15 and say, okay, we think this kid's got heaps of potential. And if we don't lose him before he plays for us in the first team to Europe, which is very unlikely to happen with the new rules that FIFA have brought in around the signing of underage, like, players, like, younger than 18. It's very hard to do that now. So when this kid's 15, he's going to be really good. When he gets to the age of 17, 18, whatever it might be, he's going to start playing for our first team. We're going to get, like, 2 good years out of him. Then we're going to get a big fee for him off to Europe. Now, okay, like, so my point is you can now that the clubs know that there's a lot of interest in their players overseas, you can now leverage that by, A, handing out some bigger contracts, so that now, you know, if a club comes in and I've got my guy on a 3-4 year contract, well, now I hold all the cards in terms of a transfer fee. I can jack up the price. I can get clubs into a bidding war for my player, as opposed to Jed Drew's got 6 months on his contract, my hands are tied. Either I accept the fee right now or we lose him for nothing in 6 months. So, like, and I'm not actually necessarily having a go at MacArthur for that. Like, I'm sure they had maybe their reasons for why there's only 6 months left on his deal. But I'm sure now they've learned, okay, like, let's put some processes in place to actually make sure that we can not just produce young players, but actually sell them at a good price and make sure that when they do go, we've got a contingency plan and a backup plan for what we're doing. So I've absolutely rambled on there for quite a while, but
yeah, it's all good.
What, I guess, do you catch the gist of what I'm saying there? What's your thoughts on all this?
Honestly, I think it's a very complex process for A-League clubs. Like, there's so many factors that A-League clubs have to like take in that they kind of have to do. It's like some risky business, because I mean, Garang Kuol was described a couple of years ago as one of Australia's best prospects, but now he's on having rumors of coming back to the A-League. All right, and like, he was one of the biggest deals the Mariners have sold in the last few years, but now that he's coming back, he's obviously, his value is going to go down. And that, and I guess it's like, with that kind of business, it's like, is it worth it for Australia, or is it worth it for, or is it worth it for the clubs? Because obviously, when you develop players, you're thinking about developing them for like first team, Europe, maybe the national team, but also you also want to get like a financial profit off it, so that the club is not dying or going to shit.
In other words, the Mariners, so like, the Mariners got, obviously, you know, they got a financial reward for selling Garang Kuol to Newcastle, for example. I think that's probably, Jose, I reckon that Garang Kuol, that conversation probably is more actually on the side of, we probably won't have time to talk about it today, but more the side of talking about the players themselves and whether they're making the right moves, and what's kind of discussion there around, you know, should Australian players, you know, what's the, if you're an A-League player, how long should you wait before you go to Europe? Is there such thing as that? Is that even a discussion? So we probably won't discuss that today. But I guess, to your point, though, like, the Mariners were a good case, though, because they lost Garang Kuol, right? But then they had players still there that could form the bones of a championship-winning team. And then they won, obviously, two championships in a row. So Adelaide and the Mariners in particular have kind of been onto this a lot earlier. Actually, more so the Mariners. Not just playing young players, but actually squad building and actually squad planning over like a 3, 4, 5 year period. Adelaide, I think, have kind of done that more this year, because the example I was going to use was Panagiotis Kikianis is a player who has been superb. Arguably, probably him and like Dylan Leonard, like the two best young defenders in the competition this season. But Adelaide signed him to a 5-year deal in the offseason. So if a club comes in for him, Adelaide hold all the cards. He doesn't have to go right away to Europe. He could play this whole season out, move in the offseason. He could even play next season for Adelaide and then move when he's like, you know, 21. And then he goes, moves for like $1 million. I don't know, something insane like that. So that's kind of the discussion I was having there.
Yeah.
Around that. So I guess, actually, I'll frame this more to you as like a question, is you mentioned, though, the clubs do have a lot of, you know, when you're spending as an A-League club, like, you are taking a risk all the time. It's just how it is. So someone mentioned this to me, and it's a good point. Okay, you give someone like Kikianis a 5-year deal, but what if he doesn't turn out to be good? And then you're stuck with a guy on your books in a salary cap league in the A-League for like 5 years. Like, that's a disaster, you know. Even if you might be on a short contract, on a small contract and not being paid as much, like, you still have wasted salary on your books for a lot of years.
I see your point, but I'm talking about like how early are they going? Like before, what I like about Aaron Kunda's transfer is that he played over 50 games for Adelaide United in their first team. Like, and that's a lot of experience for like someone his age. And look how he's doing in Switzerland. He's doing well so far, and he was doing well in Germany as well, and for Bayern's youth team. I think Bayern Munich's fans really liked him as well. So I think we have to like look into that as well. Even like Triantis and Boswell playing in Europe, they're doing extremely well, being one of the most informed players for Australia as well. I said that twice, but yeah, like, and they had loads of playing times. They had loads of playing.
Oh, good, man.
So they got like first team. They got like They got shit under their belt, you know what I'm saying? But
Yeah.
like players like Daniel Benny, for example, or like Jalen Pittman, bloody Garang Kuo as well. They've only had like a couple of first team appearances here and there, sub appearances,
Yeah.
barely any starting appearances, and that's where I'm coming from. Are
Yeah,
they
no.
really
See,
developed enough to
yeah.
like?
Actually, the things that we're saying are linked. And I think, but my point is, so like, look, Pearman is an interesting one because it looks like he's going to go to QPR at the end of the season. They're basically going to get him for nothing, and Perth aren't going to get any sort of compensation. Well, they probably will get something, maybe he's training compensation or something like that. But point is like you're talking from the player perspective of like Pearman, why is he doing that? Why is he doing that move? But let's talk about the club perspective. If I'm Perth Glory, now they're not happy about the fact that this player is leaving them when really what you're saying, he's barely kind of started to put his sort of impact and his imprint in the A-League, right? And I think they expected to have him for like at least the next 2 seasons and to be like a focal point of their team. Okay, that's all well and good, but he also had 6 months left on his contract. So, you know, you can, I guess, Jose, the point I'm getting at is you can kind of complain about like that's why is he going now? That's not good for him and it's not good for us. But yeah, but if you actually saw potential in him early and you sign him to a longer deal, 2, 3 years, whatever it is, or like 4, 5, like Adelaide did in the offseason with a lot of their players, well, then maybe you're sitting there and you're getting what you want. You get Jalen Pearman for 2 seasons and then you get handsomely rewarded with a nice fee at the end of it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like I say, it's risky business. Like no young player would ever deny an opportunity to Europe because that's where the best football is. So I think it's a good move for Pearman, but in a business perspective, it's a bad move for Perth Glory because they're not getting anything in return for it as well. And especially what they need is like money and investment to spend on, especially now that the A-League has lowered the amount of money they're going to give.
Yeah. And I
So.
think the other thing too is, you know, obviously we're looking like and you're coming across in particular when we're talking about the young players leaving too early and not having Garang Kuo situations, because that affects our ability to see a soccer like a quality Socceroos team and a Socceroos team that could be, you know, as good as like the Golden Generation. Like if we've got players just come like basically being bounced back from Europe all the time, well, that's not going to help us. I would, if I could offer a different point, I would say that the more players that go to Europe, surely, if we're looking at a law of averages, the more likely we're going to have players who stay there and actually form good European careers. Like, let's say, because we've already had what, oh, like 5, 6. Probably end up being like 10 players who will leave the A-League, young players who will leave the A-League this window. That's 10 players in January. Probably going to be the off-season window in Europe in particular is much more busier. Teams will be scouting. They'll take their time. Like we could see another 10, 15 even like leave in the off-season at the end of this season, right? So that's already like, that could be like 20, 25 players just then in the space of 6 months who have all gone to like Europe. So surely out of those 20, 25, we're not going to have every single one of them come back to the A-League within 2 years. Like that would be, I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day and I was saying that, like that would be insane. Like that would just be terrible luck for Australia as a footballing country and unheard of, right? Like at the end of the day, the bigger the pool, the more likely you're going to have actual stars and players that can play at a top level and then also do it for the national team. What are your thoughts on that, I guess, as a counterpoint?
Counterpoint. I wasn't really trying to be a counterpoint, but I guess I have been. But I guess if they are developing in Europe, all right, I'm not gonna become a counterpoint. I'm gonna become like a pro point now. But yeah, but if they're going to Europe and they're gonna develop there, I reckon that is a positive. They're gonna train in the best facilities, get training under the best coaches. So if that's gonna happen, and if they do come back to the A-League, they will get first team. I mean, look at Alu Kual. I mean, he's been quality for the Mariners for a bit. You know, they're just good performances here and there. you know, but I think I think them coming back can also be seen as a positive because that's where they can get first team as well, first team minutes as well, and truly become better than what they were in Europe. And then they go back to Europe and then be better, you know, and get more opportunities. So I think the whole thing is a positive. It's just that, you know, I don't want like, we don't want like another Daniel Lozani situation where he goes overseas and then gets injured, then he comes back, then he's never going to get called up again. Especially after that 2018 World Cup. He was pretty good.
Well, let's see. Let's see. More what are we, more Matt Ryans and Jackson Irvine. Not Jackson Irvine. Who else is I'm trying to my God, I'm blanking right now.
What type of players are you trying to call?
Triantuses and Jordan Bosses, Kissing Yangies. That's what we want. And less Arzanis and Quals.
Maybe could get another Alex Robertson too, someone who's from overseas and want to represent Australia, like Marin Yakulis wants to represent Australia as well, and he's
Yeah,
all
well, a
right.
lot of that talk's died down because Marin Yakulis is, his form's been bad and dipped. So, yeah, and actually,
Unfortunately,
but
that's the
he
end of
can't. That was the other thing too, is that he can't. It actually came out. It was revealed that he can't actually represent Socceroos. So, anyway,
the
all things that we can discuss on another pod, I'm sure. Okay. Let's wrap it up. So, a few things as well from I guess the past week in the A League. So, Western United didn't play on the weekend. They actually played the Mariners last Wednesday, 2-2 draw. Bottic on the score sheet again, talking about young players who might be who might be moving to Europe very soon. He could be one. Brisbane Roar, like we mentioned. We talked about the Wanderers on Friday. I mean, as maybe underwhelming as the Wanderers were, somehow Brisbane played worse on Friday. They were terrible. Back to their hopeless, uninspiring best. So yeah, pretty shit performance after after actually winning against Sydney for the
Nothing
first
here.
time this season. That was pretty poor to see. Auckland moving clear at the top of the table now, and looks like Jose, looks like Auckland are going to match the way things are going. They're going to match what the Wanderers did in their first season and actually win the Premier's Plate. Like if things keep going like this, so unfortunately, Wanderers fans might not be able to kind of hold on to that record, I guess, if things keep going like this. And also, Steve Corriger, the ex Sydney FC coach, is leading it. For Auckland too, that probably makes it feel a little bit worse. But no, I thought they were excellent against MacArthur. You got to give them credit. They just kind of grinded MacArthur down in that game and eventually found a way to get the second goal and win it. Good game too. Good game. Physical. They play a very physical brand as well. Adelaide, I mentioned at the start. Not too sure what happened. They were missing a couple of players against Sydney, but. Carl Viet noted kind of a lack of focus after the game, and the question was also put to him as to whether Adelaide, a kind of particularly a young team, getting sort of caught up in the fact that they're near the top and could win something this season, and he suggested that they need to have a discussion about it. So yeah, that's an interesting sort of thing to follow with Adelaide and maybe whether some complacency could be setting in to their game. The Jets fighting back in the derby, getting a 2-2 draw. Good result for them. I think, they're almost a team I want to discuss on the podcast. I want to see a little bit more from them, but they have been a lot better as well, sort of in the last few weeks. I think they're just playing a lot better. They're actually starting to break down teams a lot more, creating more chances. But also, Trent Sainsbury and Brian Kautak, listen, you are experienced defenders. You are players who have played international football. There was 3 minutes left in the game. You're 2-1 up in a derby at home, and you guys want to fuck around with the ball at the back and play out from the back like it's like I don't know, like your prime Barca trying to break down a press. Like, mate, just kick along. It's fine. Like, kick along, get the second ball. You could do it in the 87th minute. You don't have to do it in the 10th, but in the 87th, you can do it. And I couldn't believe it. Mark Jackson, I have not seen Mark Jackson that angry in my life. He was furious after the game. He was storming around, like marching around on the pitch. You could see it. And then in the press conference, you could just feel it in his voice. He was absolutely spellbinded by the fact that those two players would kind of let that happen at the end of the game like that. And the last thing I wanted to mention was Arthur Diles, who we talked about Perth, but the victory side of things, Arthur Diles, we mentioned, we were talking about in the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about Melbourne victory. And I think we were kind of saying, listen, they just got to announce this, the fact that he's going to be the head coach. We could all kind of see it coming. They did make the announcement, and then he was able to guide victory to their second straight win. So, yeah, good to see that he's kind of putting some of that noise behind him now and getting himself on some solid footing at victory. And Mitch Langrack as well has been a massive, massive acquisition for victory. I mean, at the end of the day, two clean sheets in two games kind of says everything about getting in a goalkeeper of his quality. Jose, what out of those things there that I rattled off, what stood out to you from the weekend?
I did like Noah Bodic. I think he's really picking up some form, really showing that he's a really good attacking forwardship, can really be clinical in the final third. I think I really like that, showing us that he is quality. And I think
he's fucking awesome. He's great. Just a great striker.
Yeah, he is. He is. Raw being shit is like nothing new. Okay. It's really not. It's not even news.
It's not even news.
It's just what everyone knows.
Brisbane lost. Oh, okay. All right. No worries.
Do we have anyone in Brisbane that follows us?
What do you mean? Yeah. That listens to this.
Yeah.
That's my message. You're in big trouble now. You're gonna get some Raw fans in your DMs.
That's right.
Like,
man.
Who's this? Fuck is this Jose guy? That's what it's gonna be.
Just come. I don't really care. You guys have wooden spooners.
Listen, every week, every time Brisbane lose, I just feel a lot better about the fact that I put them as a wooden spoon for this season. So yeah, no, feeling good about that. Feeling good about that.
One more thing, Auckland, right?
Yeah.
You know, ever since you said about how they're gonna mash the Wanderers, I don't want to go for them anymore. I was enjoying them for a bit at the start, but now
you forgot about that.
I want Adelaide United to do good now. Whatever Carl Viet says about Adelaide United facing complacency, just remove that, please. All right? Just get rid of that. Start playing like 2016 Adelaide United. All right? And just start playing good. Find some, just fucking win. All right? Jets were actually pretty good against the Mariners. All right? Yeah. I don't think the Mariners deserve to win that. They got really lucky as well with Ryan Scott absolutely shitting that ball into the net.
Yeah.
It was awful, but I think the Jets honestly deserve something out of that. It was a pretty entertaining game too, so it's a good game for the neutrals.
Yeah.
And as for Arthur Diles, I think Mitchell Langer is like saving his job. That's my perspective.
That's a perspective.
Yeah.
Mitch Langerak, the Arthur Diles savior.
Yeah, he had Jack Duncan in goals and he wasn't winning a single game. But now that Mitchell Langerak, former Socceroo, quality keeper, comes in, he's saving his ass all of a sudden. You know what I'm saying?
Look, I don't... Maybe in the game on the weekend, but against Sydney FC, I wouldn't say so, because I think Sydney FC didn't even create anything in that game. But yeah, it's something to watch. It's something to watch. I'll give you it. Mm. Yeah. All right.
My point will be proven right.
Well, let's see. Time will tell. Last thing, are you wearing? Is that a Lakers top?
Yeah.
So two questions.
I'm not a Lakers fan.
Oh, you're not? Okay, that was one of the questions. So you're not a Lakers fan?
Nah. But this is a nice top. This is a nice top. I like it.
Oh, it's a nice top. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm a Celtics fan, and that's making me want to vomit. So
I'm sorry if this is giving you an eyesore.
That's
I like this.
No good. Also, Also, Luka Doncic to the Lakers. Thoughts?
Thoughts? Oh, I've been every single time I go on Instagram now, just the reels. Just everyone, just every single girl
It's
saying something
such a
about
massive trade. I'm just finding a way to work it into the Frappe Trouble podcast. Why not?
it. Yeah, it's just I've been laughing at all of, I've been liking all of them, honestly. It's been funny. It's been funny. Just all the coffins, all the t-shirts just being out saying don't see, just burning the shirt.
So no, so that actually that was something I saw. I got to shout out our guy Joe K on Twitter because I saw him tweet something today about like what would, and I'll pose this to you, what would be the A-League equivalent of that trade? So if you were to trade two players in the A-League, like, or what would, actually we could even just do one player moving to one club, that would be like absolutely shocking. Like if you saw it tomorrow.
One equivalent it'll be like that is tough. I don't know an A-League equivalent
Yeah, like right now. Are you going to use a Wanderers player?
Wanderers player. Oh, this one I wouldn't want to lose.
Like, what if, actually, yeah. What if you woke up tomorrow and, like, Milanovic had signed for, like, Sydney FC? Like,
We get hammered in, we ball, we ball. We get hammered in, we ball. That's it. We don't.
that would be, like, that's also, like, different to this Doncic one because, like, he's actually
No,
joining,
you
he'd
know
be joining
what?
a
You know
rival,
what? Say
but.
Pat Wood still played for Sydney FC. If we traded Milanovic for Pat Wood, that would be the equivalent of us getting of fucking. I would cry my heart out if we
I
ever
think
got
that's
Pat
giving
Wood like Wonders.
Pat Wood too much credit at, like, comparing him to Anthony Davis. That's what I'm
Yeah, that's
not sure if
true.
he's got that
I'm
sort
giving
of
him too much
standing
respect
yet.
in that.
Yeah, but no, that's an interesting one. All right, good. We got that on tape. All right, cool. That's all we needed. All right,
Watching
sweet.
me on 4K is crazy.
Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for the pod. Cheers. Jose, thanks for joining me
Yep, thank you.
on this Monday night that we're recording. Had to move from the Sunday night, so thank you. And sorry, I'm going to go and die right now from this cough. So yeah, let me just go and do that. But no, thanks for joining me, and thanks for everyone that has listened in. And yeah, we'll be back next week. Hopefully we'll have three people on the pod. I'm hoping a bit more discussion, a bit more bounce. Hopefully this ridiculous cough of mine will also disappear. And yeah, hopefully we'll be talking about another really interesting round of A-League football, with interesting narratives and subplots and you name it. Maybe some transfers. We'll see a couple more coming through too. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. All right. I've been your host, Christian Marchetti. He's been Jose Campo. That'll do.
Bye-bye.
For That'll do for this episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. And until next week, it's bye for now.